This is Audible.
And now, part 4 of The Best Science Fiction of the Year, Volume 1. Edited by Neil Clark and performed by Jeremy Arthur and Amy Talmadge.
On, Owamayela is a Neutrosis author with a background in web development, linguistics, and weaving chainmail out of stainless steel fencing wire, whose fiction has appeared in a number of venues, including Clark's World, Asimov's, Lightspeed, and a handful of Year's Bests. On's interests range from pulsars and Cepheid variables to gender studies and non-standard pronouns, with a plethora of stops in between. Say can be found online at on.oyomoyela.net. Outsider, On Owamayela. Mota felt Io's arrival. So did everyone else on the Segye Agbe. The networks picked her up and slotted her into their awareness like a new limb. She was reading in full dominant mode, a mental posture of command that brought everyone up short. But it resolved, and her attention passed on to Mota, and the other technicians quietly found something else to be interested in. Mota closed her eyes and pulled herself away from the access panel she was working at. "Apologies. I need you," flashed into her communication line. Her mental sense of Io went tinged with regret, but not much of it. And it was overlaid with the quiet psych cue that got Mota by the scruff of her neck, made all her emotions cycle down, and made her limbs warm and heavy, even in microgravity. "Coming," she signaled back. Not that it was necessary. Not that there was any question of whether or not she would. She pushed off from the wall and headed down the corridor, the lights flowing over her skin as she passed. There was a familiar pattern to the output of each one. Generations of modifications and repairs and replacements, leaving each with its own strength and hue. And there was an atavistic comfort to moving through these halls, as though all the pieces of Mota's being that had troubled her on the colony below fit seamlessly into the ship. Io's presence was disruptive. When she wasn't right there, Mota might be able to resent her for that. Io was waiting at the shuttle bay, standing tall and expansive, her feet on the floor as though she needed them there. Mota caught herself on one of the room's handholds and held herself there, her own body curled. This close, the network bumped Io's presence up in its priority for Mota. She could feel Io's emotions like a second mental skin, confidence and focus, curiosity and wariness directed at something off the ship, and that quiet, subtle tinge of chagrin. She could feel, as well as Mota could, that Mota would rather not be there. She could also dismiss that out of hand. Work to be done. "Apologies," she said again, though her emotions conveyed just how much of a formality it was. "You're needed. A foreign ship entered our system." Surprise shocked through Mota's mind. "A ship?" she signaled back, letting her confusion flavor it. "Clarify?" "Come with me," Io said, and turned to the shuttle. Mota followed. She tried not to mind the tendril of annoyance wending from Io at getting a signal instead of a verbal reply. The Segye Agbe held an orbit over the first point of landfall on Say. But after all this time, the location was more symbolic than practical. Most of the major spaceports were on the other side of the planet, more closely hugging the equator, which meant that Io took their shuttle on a long angle down into the atmosphere toward a port with longer-range transports. Say from above was nothing like the composite metal and regulated light of the Segye Agbe. It was a sturdy, in terraformed green and wispy white atmosphere, lit by a white sun, with the silvery lines of the colony spreading across its surface like a neural web. The quiet background murmur of the colony network became a warm, ambient cloud. Too many individuals to identify, Moda could swim in the sea of secondhand emotion, inclination, preoccupation, until her own sense of self went fuzzy at the edges. But being with Io changed that. She brought them down into one of the bays, and stepped out, and the colony parted for her. The port technicians quietly delegated someone to see her, and the ambient noise quieted, just as Moda herself had. They boarded a fast, mid-range shuttle. Nothing that would carry them outside of the dense inner system, but one that would convey them quickly. "Omo," Io said. One of the farther-flung unmanned stations, then. Io linked into the ship's transmitters. She wanted Moda to do the same, so Moda did the same. It was easier sometimes to lean back and let her body connect with the network on an unconscious level. Let herself be moved like a limb for the dominant force in the room. The transmission kicked in and brought with it another's telepresence. Yan. Pilot. Working with the survey teams and contingency fleets. There was a warmth to Io's transmission out. "I'm bringing Moda. She's the expert on ancient Earth." Which had always been a useless hobbyist's expertise. Moda sat up. The cradle of humanity was far enough away to be irrelevant. Any knowledge about it was historical or speculative. Even the evidence of its planets, writ into the wobble of its star, was information that had been issued in light long before anyone on Say was born. "You found a ship?" she signaled, and the transmission went out to Yan. "The ship entered the outer system and gave off a signal," Io said. And the response from Yan came back. "It is from Earth," Yan said. His words were tinged with certainty and wonder. "Will you be able to operate it?" Moda sent a request back to the databanks on Say. Better to queue up any resources she might need now, while the transmission delay was still small. "I want to see it," Moda sent back. Then, "Maybe. I'll do my best." Yan sent as much as he could back over the transmitters as they approached. Moda drank it in, moving through his recordings and the archived information the first colonists had brought with them. Earth must have had its own evolution after the Segye Agbe left. Moda could look back down an unbroken chain of history and see the Earth they had left behind. But the Earth of all those intervening years was shadowed to her. This ship, then, was a glimmer of light. They docked on Omo, and Io took the lead, guiding them through to the bay where Yan worked. Moda followed. The room Yan occupied was large enough for one person to move comfortably in, not three. It was dominated by a central column with a curved screen, which Yan was studying. He looked up and smiled at them as they entered. Moda signaled greeting, and felt a flicker of concern pass through Yan. "She always prefers signal to vocal," Io said. "Not always," Moda thought. And she could feel Yan catch that thought and respond with a gentle amusement. Io seemed to notice that, and the focus of her attention fell on Moda. Then it passed back to Yan. Moda was silent for a moment, watching the interplay of their emotions. The landscape between them changed, like the clouds playing across Say's atmosphere. Then Yan turned to Moda. "There's text. I displayed it as soon as I opened the hatch." He waved his hand toward the screen, and Moda squeezed past him to look at it. She touched the screen, a brush at the corner, away from any of the symbols, and it changed. She touched it again. It changed again. "Translation corpus?" Moda signaled. The interface was strange. Tactile. An old Earth tradition. A critical number of words in their natural contexts. If it's a corpus, they didn't expect whoever found this ship to speak their language. "A contact ship, then," Io said. "Specifically." Moda hesitated and felt Io sigh. "Please," Io said, with a gesture to the corpus. And Moda felt like she was waking up. like the faculties of her mind, which had gone quiescent at Io's presence, were, given her permission, rearing up again. The network data on Earth sprang up in her mind, almost tangible under her fingers. Not that language. Not that one. Closer. The Sege Agbe had left Earth early into its projected interstellar phase. This ship was different in design from the Sege Agbe, and its language didn't match exactly to any of the ones on record. How many generations separated them from their common ancestry? How long did it take for a language to evolve like this? One of the programs flagged a pattern. Some 68% similarity in the ship's language to another language, with the differences seeming to follow common linguistic rules. Moda selected the match, ran the program, and the corpus sprang into semi-legibility. "I have it," she said, and part of her was surprised at that. Comfortable enough to be vocal then. But now, she could see the patterns of the foreign ship's operation, and she could make the ship respond. She highlighted the updated translation program on the network for Jan and Io. A linguist could refine it, but the screen was at least interpretable now. Moda could look at a word, and the network would take it from her visual cortex, and it would interpret it and deliver that information to the language centers of her brain. "This column is a container," Moda said. She moved through the prompts, and the screen went transparent. Enough to see a woman's face. Her mouth and nose covered by some apparatus. Her eyes closed. Io moved forward, and Jan melted back to give her room. A person? "Stasis," Moda said, and her hands fluttered. Generation ships like the Sege Agbe were considered to be a second-best solution, she signaled. Governments wanted to preserve individuals from Earth who would sleep through the interstellar voyage and wake up at their destination, so the astronauts who left Earth would also be the ones who arrived at the new colony. If the ship is from Earth, then she is from Earth. She felt their surprise. Awe from Jan. And a kind of hunger from Io. The hunger made her want to stand aside, become small and unnoticed again. "Will she wake up?" Io asked. Moda took a breath. The air out here was recycled, like the air on the Sege Agbe. It was comforting. "There are directions," she said, and found the playback controls. The screen changed, voice and printed language, but also animation. Instructions for anyone who found it. I think she was expecting the system to be habited when she arrived. "So it was," Io said. She turned to Moda. "Work with the medical staff. Help them understand anything they need to. This is our first contact with another population from Earth, Moda. Time to put your history to use." Io turned and pushed away, back out of the ship and into Omo Station, leaving Moda with her hand still on the screen of the stasis chamber. Jan let out a soft breath, and Moda caught the undercurrent of it. Wry humor. The sort born of recognizing someone's predispositions. Then it slid, transmuted into unease. He turned to her. "You know about Earth history?" he asked. Moda nodded. "We restrict the number of single-person craft in our fleet," Jan said. "It's a poor ratio of resource use to utility. Did the Earth system have the resources to send single people on interstellar journeys?" Moda turned back to the ship. Clearly they had. But it was a good question anyway. She thought back to everything she knew of Earth history. Of the Sege Agbe's reason for being. Of its reason for design. 100,000 colonists had left from Earth. Those had been her ancestors. "No," she said. "This would be a waste." Moda only advised the medical staff until they understood as much of the technology as she did, and then she escaped back to the Sege Agbe. She was happy to go. Ship systems were more intelligible to her than human systems anyway. But she was the expert on old Earth, if for no other reason than her curiosity had led her to study it, and so sooner or later, The medical staff called her back. The woman was cognizant and wanted to see the ones who had retrieved her. So Mota went down to say again and edged into the medical hall. The woman was already speaking with Io. Seeing the woman, sitting on one of the benches was strange and unnerving. She was larger than the rest of them, her skin and hair paler, the planes of her face foreign. Mota paused in the doorway, trying to feel her presence. But of course the woman had no nanotransmitters entangled with her neural network, and no capacity to access the network that linked the rest of them. She was the first person Mota had seen who she couldn't feel. Io turned to face Mota as she hesitated in the door, and motioned her in. Some of the unease faded in the face of Io's relative comfort, and Mota entered. "Mota," Io introduced. "This woman gives her name as Eva. She thanks you for your part." Mota looked at the woman. She opened her mouth, then frowned, and queried the network for a translation. Let the network inform her on how to shape her tongue into the shapes of words. "There's no need to thank me." Some language technician must have sat down with the woman, captured the pronunciation of her words, used that to inform the translation program. When Eva spoke, the network caught her words and fed Mota the sense of them. "I came seeking asylum," Eva said. Her face had adopted the kind of focus that said this had been a prepared statement. "On Earth, my people were being rounded up and destroyed. I was sent on the sojourn with our historical record, so we wouldn't be lost to history forever." She watched Mota. "You are a historian?" Mota fumbled for the words. "A technician, interested in history. An archivist will help you." She looked to Io. "Jan retrieved her vessel," Io said. "I've taken responsibility for her housing and orientation. But Eva wanted to thank you in person." Mota moved her hands. "There is no need," she said again. She'd done what anyone with her skill set would have done. The socially healthy thing to do. Io had a feeling of indulgence to her. Mota studied it. And as Io's attention turned back to Eva, Mota realized what she was picking up. A kind of proprietary attraction toward the strange Earth woman. Mota looked between them. Eva couldn't feel it, she realized. Io's formidable regard was lost on her. "You are..." Mota started to signal, and then arrested that first inclination. Eva wouldn't see it, for the same reason she didn't feel Io's desire. But it was like taking two steps backward off of a cliff. The infrastructure of the network was as central to Mota as her own lungs were. She had to scramble for words, and then convince herself that words would be heard by the woman. "To Io, you are interesting and physically pleasing," Mota said, hoping the translation would go through, that the corpus had the right words. Eva pulled back, as though something had struck her. Mota frowned at her expression, and the sensation of falling in gravity redoubled itself. "You should be able to feel this and react appropriately." But of course she shouldn't, because she didn't have the technology in her mind, and her neural network had long ago solidified past the point of introducing them. It turned Mota's stomach, like Eva was only half a person. Eva looked at Io, who had tilted her head at her. Mota turned her own attention to Io's emotions. Concern, and consideration, and recognition. She must not have thought to explain herself to Eva. And why would she? Anyone would be able to read her emotions, and capturing emotional states in words was using the wrong tool for the job. Who would think to do that? But Eva remained blank and unreadable. And soon the muscles in her face went neutral as well. "And what," she said, "is the correct reaction?" There was no sarcasm radiating from her, nor irony, nor sincerity. Nothing. Mota closed her eyes and searched for the words. "You," she said, carefully, fumbling through statements the translator had likely found translations for, "should be..." It's to your advantage? Io is high in the hierarchy. It's a privilege. I was asking her, Eva said, and Mota shrank back. Io? Eva went on. Maybe we should speak. Then a word the network didn't translate. Io tilted her head. Eva frowned and said, Only the two of us? A strange request. But Io shrugged. We can, she said. You'll have to remind me that you can't feel what I say. Mota was content to let Io orient Eva to life on Se. She preferred the Segye Agbe and the long rhythms of maintenance there, distancing herself from the novelty and celebrity that gathered around Eva on the planet below. Anything she needed, she could pull from the network. It was enough for her. Until Jan sent her a transmission, asking for her presence on Omo Station and the woman's ship, the Sojourn. She came, slipping into the narrow confines of the stasis chamber, where Jan was working. Earth historian, Jan signaled. He was preoccupied, red as though he needed another brain and perspective to process something. Tickling at the edge of her mind, Mota could feel Io on an approach as well. Eva says that on Earth, most of the powerful factions are people like us, Jan said. Altered humans. They make laws that try to stamp Eva's people out. Mota signaled. Altered. The word turned over in her mind. From what? Jan's annoyance twined around the question, but it wasn't directed at her. Natural humans. She says her people have nothing but variation in breeding. But all our variation was at one point selected by breeding. On the Segye Agbe, with their limited resources, no one had been able to make a genetic loom. They could only splice the DNA they had. It had been another generation or two after landfall on Se, before the looms had been built. And those had only been used to design and redesign the world's plant and animal life. Se's environment didn't have as many restrictions as the Segye Agbe. The adaptations, which served life on the ship, didn't hinder them on the ground. Jan said, Yes, in a tone of mock dissent. But his emotional state was shaded with vindication. But to Eva, our treating the genome and the zygote is artificial. Not to mention, he gestured at his head, the network. Mota balked. The network is an assistive machine. Her ship uses assistive machines. She was in stasis. It's different. To Eva, it's different, Jan snorted. I looked up the history we brought on the Segye Agbe. You should look up factionalization, outgrouping. He turned to Mota. I think we became better humans on the Segye Agbe. We didn't have room to take all our behaviors with us. Then, his attention shifted off Mota, and his emotions turned anticipatory. Mota turned to look behind her, eyes hitting the screens first, then moving into the hall. Motion there. Io had apparently docked, though her presence felt as though she was still a few minutes out. Strange. But Eva was with her, her hand on Io's elbow, as though Io was leading her by touch. Eva was ungainly in the microgravity. Mota felt the instinctive submission rising up in the back of her mind. But it was dampened. Io's attention wasn't on her, and she still felt abnormally far away. You've been working on my ship? Eva asked. Mota studies historical objects, Io said. Jan studies ships. Eva looked from one of them to the other, then to Io. Io's curiosity was reflected in her face. All her attention was on Eva. Mota looked to Eva's face. This woman from Earth couldn't feel it. How insulated, how isolated must her life have been? Please do not, Eva said, turning to Mota. The ship is part of my historical record. I do not want it tampered with, or made to fit your colony. Sympathy and recognition from Io, and now Mota felt herself go distant and calm. This and that hormone releasing itself into her, patting down any protest. Io was determined that the decision should go Ava's way on this, and Mota felt no compulsion to make a stand in defiance. So it was all right then, even though the all right slid over her own predilections to smother her. She signaled assent. Jan frowned, but Mota could feel the acquiescence in him as well. Disappointment, too. He held on a bit longer. His hierarchical distance wasn't as far as Mota's. But then he exhaled. His muscles relaxed, and he signaled assent as well. "It's a lovely ship," he said, wistful. "I haven't seen any like it." Ava's face softened into a smile. But it looked like a transmission delay. Mota shook her head, trying to clear it. The distance from Io and the lag from Ava made it feel as though they were talking across gulfs, either of fractions of kilometers or whole light seconds. It made her dizzy. "Come on," Jan signaled. Mota followed him back to the shuttle, and he pointed it back toward Se. After a while, she signaled, "Frustrated." Jan echoed the sentiment, but said, "Maybe she wants to cling to the familiar." Mota turned her head to the window, watching the stars. "I wish we could feel her." Assent from Jan. Mota sighed and closed her eyes and let her mind drift. Then there was a hand on her shoulder. Mota jumped. Body and mind jarred out of her doze. She spun. And there was Jan, his expression concerned. And yes, she could feel his concern, but barely. As though he were kilometers away. Not there, next to her. She shook her head, blinked, tried to make the image resolve into what she felt over the network. "Something is wrong," Jan said. "You went dark. I thought you were dead." His signal was far fainter than it should have been. "You're distant," she signaled back. Jan squinted at her. "Sometimes when we go in for close chromosphere scans, we'll get interference like this," he said. "I can't feel my team. It's like we've all become ghosts." "Like Ava," Mota thought. But the idea that Ava was a ghost was ridiculous. Ghosts didn't come in stasis, didn't have to have their ancient earthships interpreted and their blood cleaned of chemicals. Ghosts did not exist. "There's always some variation in the strength of the network signal," Jan said. "Solar weather affects it, even as far out as sea. But mostly, it's not noticeable. And we don't have that weather today." Mota moved closer. Not that it helped. "Is it here?" she signaled, then winced. It felt as though she was talking into a vacuum. She marshaled her thoughts into words so that she could speak them. Clumsier, yes, but at least she could hear her own voice and Jan's, and the sound didn't belie the distance. "Is it just this transport? Localized weather?" Jan shifted, and his distant unease echoed across to her. "We'll find out once we're back on Se," he said. Se was in a state of unrest. Jan brought them down onto the port and into a muted background hum of unease. Even on the planet, even with the density of population there, it felt as though isolation was blooming up on the network around them. A query against the network produced no answers, and Jan shook his head. "I can check the solar monitor stations," he said. Mota raised her face to the sky. "Technician," Jan said. "A reminder, perhaps. Hard to tell." "I'm sure there's something you can do. Can you go into one of the network nodes?" "Perhaps," Mota signaled. "Safe flight," she said, and Jan turned back to the port. Mota went to the archives. She wasn't trained in any of the network maintenance, and while she could just show up and ask to help, Something else had her curiosity. She accessed the central archives and queried for the historical record Ava had brought. She didn't know what she was looking for. Ava's history was like much of the Earth history Mota was familiar with. One group choosing to annihilate another over conflicts that looked absurd from a distance. Their conflict had been genetic. Ava's people refusing any engineered alteration, even disease immunity. And their opponents had been winnowing away human genetic diversity. Both stances were ridiculous to Mota's mind. And the records were dead, without the encoded emotional resonance, which would have helped her understand. Ava was here, now, a single survivor who would have to adapt. And Say and its system were vast. More variation existed now than had left on the Segye-Agbe. Her conflict was an Earth conflict. And by now, it was generations behind her. Perhaps Io would show her that. Ava appeared as Mota was leaving. Mota walked out of central data storage, and there she was, standing tall as Io or any of the others at the top of the hierarchy did. Never mind that she was foreign, an alien, outside of the hierarchy entirely. Mota felt the hairs on the back of her neck prick up. And if Ava had been part of the colony, and as prestigious as she imagined herself to be, she would have made Mota settle with a look and an intention. She was speaking with one of the archivists. The network was still translating, but the translations came through soft. The network heard Ava's words through Mota's ears, and it queried for the definitions. But the whispered meaning floated to her over a gulf. If she hadn't been on Say, nestled in among the smart buildings and the network transmitters, Mota wondered if she'd be able to understand Ava's words at all. She turned and headed away, feeling disconnected and bow-legged in Say's gravity. The Segye-Agbe would feel empty if the interference persisted there. Even Say felt empty, like the ocean of presence had ebbed back down some all-surrounding shore. But the ship was still more familiar. Mota wanted to cling to that familiarity. There was sound behind her, and she ignored it, moved down the hallway toward the port until Ava's voice called. Wait! Mota wanted to push along the wall, propel herself into a different place entirely. She was faster in microgravity. Instead, she turned and saw Ava coming toward her. There was no command emanating from her. Mota could have walked away. Instead, she waited, head tilted, watching the Earthwoman approach. Mota, right? Ava asked. Mota nodded. You're a technician? Mota nodded again, trying to work out how to communicate that Ava should hurry up, get to the point, let her go. Io, at least, would read her discomfort and disengage. Ava seemed ignorant of it. And here, with the strange fog clouding the network, no one else could feel the dynamic and intervene. That frightened Mota. Io's explained your hierarchy, Ava said. I couldn't believe it. You're a slave? Mota frowned. The word slave hadn't been translated, and after all this time with Io, she felt like Ava should have been able to ask for whatever words she needed. She signaled, What? Then caught herself and asked aloud. You don't have free will, Ava said. You were born into a low caste. And that was factually wrong. And Mota cut her hand through the space between them. I have free will, she said. She knew that concept. Ava looked surprised to be interrupted, but then she banished the expression from her face. But you were designed never to argue with your superiors, she said. You were forced. No, Mota said. Again, there was that brief surprise, and it vanished. I was not designed. And I argue if it's... I only don't argue when it's against the health of the colony. Ava was shaking her head. Io told me about the hierarchy, she said again. It gives some of you power over the rest of you. Power they haven't earned. Power they can abuse. They can override your desires, can't they? Unease moved through Mota's stomach, like a technician in microgravity. She was overriding her own desires, standing here talking to Eva. It felt more wrong than the easy passivity that crept over her when Io approached her. Some people lead, and others defer, she said. But the colony keeps everyone in check. If you don't like a person, everyone knows. They stay away from you. Like Io stays away from me, should have been the subtext. Like you should stay away from me. It would have been obvious to anyone. Like the fact that she had free will should have been obvious, or the fact that her desires still existed even when she deferred. In my culture, we're all equal, Eva said. Mota tilted her head. I read about Earth, she said, and our history. Our scholars, when we were on the Segye Akbe, historically, there was never a culture without hierarchy. It's innate. Human social trait. Eva looked angry for a moment. Offended? Then it was gone. Well, she said, people earn their positions where we come from. We are not born into them. That, it's unnatural, not right. But it kept us alive, Mota wanted to say. She wanted to be aboard the Segye Akbe more than ever, in the halls that generations of her ancestors had adapted to, in the confines of its hull. Eva had her cornered down here, and didn't know or didn't care that she wanted to escape. For years, centuries, there had been no escape from the ship as it sailed through the interstellar medium. But there had been harmony, or a close enough approximation. No, Mota said. For us, you are not right. Eva, this is uncomfortable. I'm uncomfortable. And there, any civilized person should have disengaged. But Eva stepped forward. If you could be liberated, she said, wouldn't you want to be? Mota turned and ran away. The motion was ungainly. She spent more of her life in orbital gravity than terrestrial. But Eva didn't follow. The shuttle ride up to the Segye Akbe was silent on the network, and Mota didn't plug herself into one of the transmitters to reach out. And the ship itself was quiet, but filled with murmurs. Like we've all become ghosts, Jan had said. This was the kind of silence Eva lived in, all her life, Mota thought. Worse than this. Absolute silence, without the promise of connection. Mota couldn't imagine it without also going mad. She made her way to one of the old science modules and settled in among its resources. A transmitter linked up the databanks with the central ones on Se, and she called up the records from Jan's expedition out to fetch the Sojourn. Then she dug deeper. The first moment the Sojourn signals had been detected. The first scans that caught the ship and resolved it. She requested Jan's experience from the central banks, and they fed it up to her. Strange feelings approaching the ship. Washes of color and sound across the network as Jan and his fleet mates drew near. Many different signals coming from the ship, and a few of them tickled the network. When Jan sent his own signal to the ship, everything but that channel had died down. Jan hadn't noticed a fade in the network when he'd retrieved the Sojourn, or brought it to Omo. But he had before. Those incoherent washes, an accident of design, transmitting on the same frequencies as the nanotransmitters interfaced with their neurons. It made Mota wonder. The Sojourn hadn't been moved from its post at Omo. Mota took a databank and loaded it with the translation program and requested a shuttle to Omo, stewing in her own thoughts the entire way. The spaceport had felt emptier than it was. Everything felt empty. At least here, in the far reaches of the inhabited system, the emptiness seemed right. She docked at Omo and went into the Sojourn to take a look around. Parts of the ship were missing. Some of it probably was the data storage, taken down to Say so that its encryption could be translated and Ava's precious historical record preserved. But was all of it? Moda ran her hands over the walls, the consoles. She could feel the databank on the shuttle, feel the technician's records, and the translation program at the edge of her mind. The Sojourn seemed to be cast from smooth composite, its hull one large component. Not like the Sege Agbe, where every piece could have been detached, recycled, cast into any one of innumerable other forms. The Sege Agbe had been designed to be broken apart and remade as it carried a living population from one star to the next. The Sojourn had been designed to perform one task competently once. And that told Moda something as she moved from the stasis chamber to what seemed to be a technician access hatch. Everything on the ship had a congruity. Everything that wasn't part of the stasis system or the engines looked like an afterthought. Mismatched. She looked at the equipment. There, a processing unit. There, a detachable screen. Moda took a deep breath, calling up all the translation they'd established. The Sojourn had been able to read the presence of their colony and send out a signal. And Ava had been horrified at the thought of the network laid into human brains. When this craft had been built, someone would have come into this little human habitable room and calibrated the equipment, would have tested it, and they would have done so with their hands and their eyes, not information communicated directly to their neurons. Moda took the screen and began to interface. Reading the translations of the symbols that greeted her, Moda wondered when the screen had last been touched. How many generations ago? Those many light years away. Had the Sege Agbe still been on its long voyage? Or was this ship younger than that? And had the last person to work their way through these menus been a technician like Moda? Or had their society not been organized upon those lines? Where we come from, Ava had said, people earn their positions. Where we come from. Ava had experienced a kind of aloneness that Moda could hardly imagine. Light years from home, alone in her thoughts and sensations. Why use we? And, yes, there, the ship had transmitters. Not ones that could tap into the larger network, or the smaller ones integrated with a human mind. But it had sent out signals that called Yon to it. And it had sent out others. And was still sending them out. Moda frowned and isolated them. Two signals. One broadly dispersed. One hyper-focused and sent back the way the Sojourn had come. Moda chose that one to follow, digging into the ship's scanners until something resolved on them. Seven somethings. Seven ships. None as large as the Sege Agbe, but approaching its volume combined. And if they were stasis ships, without the need for living areas and corridors and recreational facilities and maintenance bays? Moda sucked in breath, and the hatch opened behind her. She spun, eyes wide, and there was Ava. I thought, Ava said, I had asked you to stay away from my ship. Moda moved, revealing the screen behind her. How many? She asked, hoped that the words would carry all the meaning she wanted them to. Ava's eyes flicked to the screen, but if she was surprised to see her fleet on it, Moda couldn't read it in her face. On Earth, Ava said, our ancestors were allies, good friends in agreement. I was sent to negotiate cohabitation if my people had to evacuate the Earth system. I didn't expect to arrive here and find that you were no longer human. We are human, Moda said. Ava looked disgusted. This time the expression stayed. "You are eugenicists," she said. "Your genetics are polluted. It was people like you who are destroying my people." "We evolved," Mota said, "to limit conflict." "By engineering subservience?" Eva asked. "My fleet is on its way. We can stop this practice of hooking you up to this mind control network. We can help you restore your genetic pool. Your children can live lives that are truly free." "You're interfering with the network," Mota said. The realization was a nausea. "Yes," Eva said. "Can't you feel it? You don't have to submit to everyone you meet."
"You're alone," Eva seemed to say. Seemed to not realize she was saying, "In the dark, and you should be happy for it."
Mota launched herself at Eva. Eva started and planted her feet as though she were in planetary gravity. Mota twisted, changing her angle enough to catch Eva's arm and spin her, then pushed off from her and flew toward the hatch, leading back to the Omo station proper. Eva growled, disoriented, and Mota swung the hatch closed behind her. Omo station wasn't large. Mota reached a transmitter just as Eva opened the hatch behind her and fumbled into a connection. If she could just send this information back to sea, slicing through the interference before Eva was upon her. And then Eva was upon her, wrenching her away from the transmitter, throwing her into the darkness of network interference again. Mota curled herself and pushed away, but this time Eva grabbed her, locking their momentum. Eva's hand closed around her throat. And then the hatch opened. This time they both startled. Eva turned, and the break in her attention was enough for Mota to twist free. And there in the hatch was Io, tall and present, taking in the scene. Mota flew to Io and gripped her arm, letting the proximity carry her whole emotional state. Anger and fear and incredulity. Io turned to regard Eva.
"I don't think I should chastise Mota for disobeying your request," she said. "I came here because I thought I might have to, but I believe one of you should explain."
"I will explain," Mota said. And Io smiled thinly. This close, the network connected them. And the truth burned in Mota for anyone but Eva to see. Yan arrived on the Segye Akbay, his presence clear among the ship's usual population. Mota paused in her work, extracting herself from the old databanks and recycling systems. "Here," she signaled, and felt Yan approach. He waited until he was in the same room as her to say anything.
"We were able to reactivate the stasis," he told her. "Eva is stable."
Mota nodded. She didn't have to say, was relieved not to say, how she felt about that, or that her feelings were confused.
"Io is still angry,"
Yan remarked. Mota let out a laugh. "So am I."
"And most of us, I think," Yan said.
He didn't feel angry, just a long, slow resentment curling under his words.
"If it had been a vote, we might have killed her."
Mota closed her eyes. There was a vote now, and the network visualized the voting for her. The decisions traveled in waves across the colony at outposts, one holdout or another synthesizing and summarizing their views and offering them up for perusal, influencing another shift, or dissipating into the growing consensus. Yan was there, in her peripheral awareness, washed out by the voting she'd called up, but present. No ghost standing next to her. She could hear a question, lingering.
"Eva made a bad decision," he said. "Her people are going to arrive, and if their stasis is the same as hers, they'll rely on our cooperation to revive them. So why act antisocially? Did she not know?"
If she'd had the network, she could have felt the fabric of the colony, known that she was making a mistake. Of course, if she'd had the network, she'd never have been able to hide a thing. "Maybe," Mota said.
though she wasn't sure, and she knew Jan recognized that. She felt around for the right words. Even the right nuance would do. She hated us, and didn't disengage, she signaled at last. It was unnatural. At least it went against Moda's nature. Jan let out a breath. Then he settled back, and Moda felt him key into the voting. Have you decided? Moda asked. A wistful affirmative came to her over the network.
Majority, he said. Redirect their ships to some other systems, or back to Earth. I'll miss their ships. I want to study them. You?
Moda closed her eyes again. The visualization was waiting for her. Its colors. Soothing. I don't know, she said. Skepticism from Jan. Moda's fingers moved. Eva thought I didn't have free will. She wanted to signal. But this is my vote. I have to make the choice. But the words were less accurate than she wanted them to be. And she could catch the edge of understanding, flowing from Jan like a warm regard. That was enough. Ken Leo is an author and translator of speculative fiction, as well as a lawyer and programmer. A winner of the Nebula, Hugo, and World Fantasy Awards, he has been published in the Magazine of Fantasy and Science Fiction, Asimov's, Analog, Clark's World, Lightspeed, and Strange Horizons, among other places. He also translated the Hugo-winning novel, The Three-Body Problem, by Leo Tsishin, which is the first translated novel to win that award. Ken's debut novel, The Grace of Kings, the first in a silkpunk epic fantasy series, was published by Saga Press in 2015. His first short story collection, The Paper Menagerie and Other Stories, was published in March.